We've got our interlude at the moment now. I've got Kevin Farmer here sitting in the studio. He's got a massive coffee sitting in front of him. I'm assuming you're all pepped up, Kevin. What do you got for us?
Well, hi, Darren. Today, I just want to communicate some sort of basic realities about climate change feedback mechanisms. I've mentioned them before on the show. I've alluded to my personal concern about thawing permafrost. But lately I've been doing a lot of reading, specifically, you know, I haven't really updated my knowledge on this topic in a while. I did a lot of research a few years ago, and I became well acquainted with the various, feedback mechanisms that could potentially come into play in the climate change scenario. And I just sort of spent the last 2 weeks really updating my information, and you know, in the intervening years, things have not gotten any better.
I totally thought you were going to say, and it turns out we're totally fine.
Yeah, no.
Oh, man.
It definitely is not the case, and I think it's really important that people come to understand this.
And so what sorts of things had you noticed just in your research from a few years ago versus sort of what you'd looked at now? Was there any specific things that really jumped out at you as like, oh, that's a lot worse than it used to be? Or did you find anything that had maybe either the situation had improved or our understanding had improved and it wasn't as bad as we thought it was? Any of that?
Oh, God, no. No, in fact, routinely, so, you know, environmentalists have been branded as alarmists and hysterics, you know, since the 70s, and they're afraid of that label. It's a conversation stopper. They're very shy about being branded as alarmists, especially climate scientists. And we've seen over and over and over again that their projections have been too conservative. Mm-hmm. You know, the ice is melting much faster than anyone predicted. The planet's warming faster than anyone predicted. The carbon sinks that we were hoping would buy us some time seem to be failing well ahead of schedule. You know, that they've ceased to perform as carbon sinks, and now so more of our emissions are staying in the atmosphere now because some natural buffers are full. I can't think of any more off the top of my head, but it's just been every single time that a prediction of the climate change model has been verified, it seems to be always the case that it's been found out that prediction was in fact too conservative.
I remember one of the things that I've noticed is sort of a running joke where people say, you know, when there was concerns about IPCC numbers, you know, having been massaged, and, you know, the quote unquote faking of the hockey stick graph and the big quote unquote scandal with those letters that were found at the university and all that sort of stuff, is that, you know, most people in the know, most people who have either, you know, had secondary education, post-secondary level education on the issue, or, you know, any sort of fairly good understanding of the actual science, has been that, you know what, when you're looking at it and you talk to any of these scientists, the reaction is usually that if these numbers were massaged at all, they were reduced because they didn't think people would believe what the numbers said.
Well,
this
is the thing, and this is why I'm almost sort of proactively pessimistic, is because the spin on environmental issues is to try and soft pedal the message so that people will not overreact to it. You know, you've got to preach hope, essentially. It's like political messaging. You've got to be preaching hope rather than despair, or else people won't buy into what you're selling.
We can't be anti-guns. We've got to be pro-safety.
Yeah, exactly. And
which is sort of the same argument, but I think it does the same thing. It deludes what it is you're actually trying to achieve when you're switching your language around. And
well, even prominent, you know, climate campaigners will. I mean, you know, I was watching, you know, The Agenda with Steve Paikin recently, and a well-known climate campaigner, Keith Stewart, was for the climate change campaigner for Greenpeace, was on the show, and he calmly stated that, you know, he was on the show against four other sort of pro-carbon voices, which I thought was a real mismatch as far as, you know, lining up guests for that conversation to take place. But he calmly pointed out to everyone at the table, he corrected some what was being said, and he rather calmly pointed out that according to the International Energy Agency, we're on track for a 6-degree rise in temperatures. And no one stops to say, holy crap, 6 degrees rise in temperature. That hasn't existed in 100 million years since the center of the Earth was desertified and dinosaurs were grazing on polar rainforests. A 6 degree rise in temperature is an utter catastrophe. It's a civilization ending event. We would be reduced to hunter gatherers struggling for existence at the poles of the planet. Even the target, the internationally agreed upon target of 2 degrees Celsius of warming, what's been lost while that term's been bandied about over and over and over again. One, we're not going to meet that target, so don't anyone get their hopes up that we're going to meet the target of constraining the rise in temperature to 2 degrees Celsius. But 2 degrees Celsius is what that target represents, is the point at which it is estimated that our chances of avoiding dangerous climate change are 50-50. So even what we're shooting for still has a 50-50 chance of being an utter disaster.
The Russian roulette metaphors are just streaming through my mind, but I'll let you keep talking.
Yeah, it's like loading half the chambers in a game of Russian roulette. If you want me to go into the permafrost thing now or later,
I think we've got a couple minutes. Why don't you go into the permafrost?
Okay, so what's going on is the planet's warming. So permafrost is frozen ground, basically. And what happens with plant material when it dies there is that it freezes as well. And so there's enormous amounts of frozen organic material stored in the Earth's permafrost. What happens is this permafrost thaws, which is what it's doing right now, is that organic matter starts to decompose. If it decomposes in the presence of oxygen, carbon dioxide is produced. If it decomposes in the absence of oxygen, methane is produced. And methane is 22 times more effective as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. And you have to assume, since only the top layer of permafrost is exposed to the atmosphere, that the vast majority of thawing tundra is going to produce methane.
And one of the, just from my climate change class, I know a retort someone might make to that if they were, say, sitting opposed to you on the CBC roundtable or something like that, might be, well, yes, but if I'm correct, methane is stays, it's less, quote unquote, less damaging because it dissipates faster. I said, yeah, but do you have any concept of just how much of it there is?
Yeah, exactly.
That's like saying, it's like, well, a hand grenade isn't as dangerous as a fire because, it's over in 2 seconds. Yeah, but it depends how many people are standing next to it.
Well, yeah, and that's actually a point I'll get to. So it's estimated that there's 1.7 trillion tons of carbon stored in the permafrost. That's twice the existing global atmospheric inventory of carbon from all sources. By carbon, in this case, I mean carbon dioxide. So if say all of the carbon in the permafrost were to be released as carbon dioxide, which isn't going to happen, we would at least triple the existing inventory of greenhouse gases. But the fact is, it's going to be released as methane for the most part, and so we could effectively multiply the greenhouse gas inventory many, many times. Well, not many, many times over, but say up to 20 times over. We could just dramatically increase the inventory. So what's going on, though, is that it's a feedback mechanism, because as the methane and the carbon dioxide get released, the temperatures rise. As the temperatures rise, more permafrost thaws. As more permafrost thaws, more greenhouse gases are released. And we're talking about a contribution to climate change that so thoroughly dwarfs our own that if this process becomes self-sustaining, shutting off all of the anthropogenic sources of greenhouse gases tomorrow won't stop it, because it just dwarfs our own contribution. There's no way to put that genie back in the bottle. And the punchline of the story is that some new research has indicated that the point at which this process will become irreversible is at a rise of 1.5 degrees Celsius. That's the point at which people who are studying this believe the permafrost feedback mechanism will be irreversible. So even that target of 2 degrees, we've warmed 0.8 degrees since pre-industrial times. So we're more than halfway to the 1.5 degree tipping point, target tipping point. And if we were to cease all anthropogenic emissions tomorrow, the atmosphere would still continue to warm for hundreds of years. It's called climate commitment. It takes a while for things to heat up. Once you know we've hit 400 parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere now. But we're not going to feel the effects of that right away. It takes time. It just takes time to heat up a planet, and so we're already committed to a certain increase past where we already are. Even if we shut everything down tomorrow, and I looked up as many scenarios as I could find, and all of the projections of climate commitment, there's varying ranges of climate commitment, but all of them take us past the 1.5 degree rise at which the permafrost feedback mechanism is estimated to be irreversible.
So, and unfortunately, we will have to leave it there, but I'm going to just leave you on one note, which is that I love that language, climate commitment. I think this should be part of a new campaign, because everybody knows that your average man is terrified of commitment, right? So we'll just keep calling it climate commitment, and maybe we'll solve this problem overnight. Anyway, we'll have to figure out something else for the women, but I think you're on a roll there. So anyway, we're going to check in with you next week. I know you had a lot more there. We just dealt with permafrost a little bit. We'll come back and we'll check in with some of the other stuff you've been looking at next week, but we've got to move on now just to make sure that we get time for our last feature. So we're going to take just 30 seconds of a music break as a segue here to let you digest that. Also to give you a chance to go to the website, greenmajority.ca, and look up the readout, because I don't have time in the show right now to go through the special offer that we're offering here. So if you missed it at the beginning of the show, either just go to greenmajority.ca, click on the priority update link, or go to our Facebook page and look for the event page that we've created, or you can just go anything, or you could call me, you can email me, do anything you like, but we need to get you involved. We're going to take a really quick music break for like 30 seconds, and we'll be back with Giles Slade.